Welcome on one and all to episode 196 of the Original Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, we are finally out of the 2024 NFL Combine. So we didn't do much of a Combine preview last week. We talked about it. I mean, we didn't ignore it, but it's a very odd time for the Combine. You and I and our friends, different sets of friends, have been doing a lot of texting and commiserating, I think is the best way to put it, that it kind of feels like the beginning of the end with how they are doing the Combine now, right?
In a way, and I've seen a lot of tape, a lot of takes like that, including our buddy Charles McDonald, who writes for Yahoo. Today, he wrote that one of the biggest losers of the Combine was the Combine itself. And he gave some good reasons. I mean, we saw Marvin Harrison. He came in and weighed in and then took off. He didn't even do his media thing.
Oh, by the way, if you're interested for a hot take early, for some Cardinals fans, that means he's a diva.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me. That, I think that would be any fan base is going to have some old school, old heads like that. And, you know, you and I are no spring chickens, but we don't really care that he ducked out on the media interview where some fantasy football guy could have screamed, "Don't you want to compete?"
Like, yeah, right.
Yeah, you saw that. Everyone saw that viral clip with the Caleb Williams and the fantasy football guy. So, yeah, I don't blame a guy for skipping an event that seems over-credentialed at this point. But, you know, I did some reflecting on this, and we're going to talk about some other guys who did some unusual things. But a lot of big names still did the testing, ran the 40, got weighed in, certainly. And did the interviews, and we saw some engaging interviews. Like Romo Dunze was one of the most one of the funniest things I saw was somebody asked him if he could land a plane, and he said, "No, I couldn't, and all souls on board will perish." And I just thought, Like, what a quick response. I wonder if I don't think it was scripted, but you know, quick wit by Odunze to say that, because no false modesty there, no overconfidence. He just said, "No, I don't know how to." He knows how to play football. He doesn't know how to fly a plane. Fair enough. As somebody who's been flying a lot lately, I appreciate that candor and hope to never see him in the cockpit when I board.
Yeah, right. This was a unique one because it feels like there's a turning of the tide in terms of how people are viewing the Combine itself. And what I
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we're getting almost too analytical. And what I mean by that, and that's kind of where I wanted to jump off, is that we're trying to find advantages at every turn. And I understand that. And quite frankly, I respect it, right? Like, if you're not cheating, you ain't trying, right? Like, that's the whole. And so what people are doing is they're looking at things and they're saying, well, this metric works for this guy but doesn't work for this guy. We need to take this metric. And that was what the Combine was supposed to be and supposed to do, right? Like,
yeah, it's supposed to be like a baseline comparison for people that are taking the same athletic tests and comparing them to one another, and, you know, comparing their height, weight, the measurables, comparing their 40 times and their vertical jumps and adjusting them for size. That's what the Combine was. It's funny that you say, I mentioned a fantasy football writer yelling a question to Caleb Williams, but we're also seeing a lot of fantasy football guys that they play Dynasty like you and I do, and they get involved with these like fantasy specific stats that really apply more to NFL, because there's so much variation between NFL and college offenses, and then within the college ranks between college offense to college offense, right? So we talked about it on Patreon last week. You can sign up there for $2 a month, and you get the bonus episodes. We've got 126 of those. So if you're not a patron, I recommend, we'll do another show later this week on Patreon. So recommend, now's a good time to jump in, March and April, and then you can, you know, unjoin until next March and April, whatever you want to do. But anyhow, they're using these, we talked about with Keon Coleman, yards per route run, and you'll see these line graphs comparing yards per route run with forced missed tackles or something like that. And those are stats that have helped fantasy sharks get good, especially with the daily fantasy stuff. But I'm not sure that there's a lot of application to draft scouting yet because of all the variations and because we know that NFL teams, some might favor upside, some might favor polish. Even the fantasy guys know a lot of it's about the landing spot. Where does the player land? What offense? Is the coach a lame duck? That kind of thing. So I think, and not to interrupt and steal your point, but I think what you were getting at is like kind of an oversaturation of information. And that seems almost like it's ready to replace the combine, but I'm not sure we're there yet because this combine was so popular. There was a packed house on Saturday watching the quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. Like, this is a big fan event. The NFL is not going to give that up. Somebody's going to have to pry it from their cold, dead hands. And I think the combine's going to be a lasting thing. It's just, we're going to get more information. Like, instead of just the 40 time, we're going to get some GPS chip reading from the drills and things like that, what we saw over the weekend. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's just changing. It's a little bit different, but we still just have we'll talk about it tonight. We still have a lot of guys to compare in terms of measurables and 40 times and other testing.
Yeah. And what I meant by it is that it feels like we're all, and you kind of brought it up, we're using metrics to fit our preconceived notions.
That's the most dangerous thing.
And it just feels like there's no, there's nobody like, basically there's no gatekeeping to it. And you guys know us, like, we're not into gatekeeping anyways, but like this idea,
if there was gatekeeping, we wouldn't have a show.
Right. But this idea that Amarius Mims ran a 4.33 short shuttle and then he never ran it and he got passed around for 5 hours. And I get that that was a mistake that was made, but like Justin said, there was literally hundreds of people tweeting out live results, videos of guys doing testing events. And I know the short shuttle is not a sexy testing event. I know it's kind of off in the corner doing its own thing, but you would think that one person on the ground would have noticed a 6'7", 340-pound man doing the short shuttle and doing it in what had to have been record-breaking time for a human that size. Mm-hmm. And for everybody to, you know,
it turns out another offensive lineman ran that short shuttle with a last name starting with an M. So that's how the mix-up happened, but not as big as Mims, not a 340-pound guy.
No, no, not. And McCormick's a guy I really like out of South Dakota State. But, like, it genuinely makes no sense to me how you can look at Keon Coleman's testing, look at his gameplay, and then look at Johnny Wilson, who tested better, quote unquote, and then come to the conclusion that Johnny Wilson's the better player. And it's like, well, they were literally on the same team, asked to do similar things, and Johnny Wilson wasn't anywhere as good Mm-mm. as Keon Coleman.
Yeah, I don't think you'd see a single Florida State fan have that take. I'm not sure that you would have anybody on the Florida State coaching staff or on the team say that Johnny Wilson's the better player or the better prospect. So it is interesting. I don't want to harp on the fantasy football aspect of it, but I think that's where a lot of this comes from. And, you know, those guys play with so many teams. They do so many drafts. A lot of the fantasy writers, they're looking for an edge that doesn't involve watching a ton of college football. And I get that because you and I, you know, as we get older and have more responsibilities, we get to watch less and less each year. That usually results in our big boards being smaller. But you still want to, you know, turn on a Just Bombs production video and you'll see that Coleman's got better highlights. It's the highlight test, right? If your highlights aren't that good, then what's the rest of your tape going to look like? And you kind of start from there. I know a lot of these guys do watch the clips, and even some guys are get really serious about it. It's their job. But yeah, I think there's some clutter with some of the metrics. So I mean, that's why I think certain guys just don't participate anymore, because they don't care. They don't want the noise, and they already know they're gonna get drafted highly. So you want to jump into these? We got kind of a hodgepodge here. It's kind of, we'll go as rapid. You know, Seth and I say we go rapid fire, but we end up getting into discussions about some of these things as we go. But you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. And so the first thing that came out of the combine results has to be discussed, and that's obviously Xavier Worthy setting the record with a 4.21 40.
With a legitimate record-setting run. They did this simulcam, and he did indeed beat John Ross.
So the question becomes, obviously, for him, is he more Marquise Hollywood Brown, or is he more DeSean Jackson? And you know, that's really what the question becomes.
I mean, either one would be pretty good. I mean, one obviously better than the other, but those are two good outcomes if you draft Worthy, right?
And so that becomes the other question. Is drafting Worthy in the first round, and by the way, DeSean Jackson went in the second round, 49th overall. But back when he was, there might have been 32 teams when he was drafted. I think there was.
We're old, so there's been 32 teams since, I think, 2002.
So let me ask you this. Marquise Hollywood Brown never had a 1,000-yard season, I don't believe. DeSean Jackson's had 5 1,000-yard seasons, 2 additional over 900-yard seasons. He had one season with Tampa Bay in 2018 where he led the league in yards per reception in only 12 games and put up 774 yards. So I mean, there's a bounty of good things that he did over his long, long career. I mean, we're talking a long, very esteemed career, 15 years in the NFL, which is absurd for anybody. Obviously, the last year at Baltimore wasn't what he wanted. But, you know, his last super productive season would be considered probably that Tampa Bay season where he had 41 receptions for 774 yards and 4 touchdowns. Outside of that, the guys that have held the record or been close to the record for the combine fastest time have never really lived up to the hype. Right?
Yeah. So Trey Wingo tweeted out a list, and you know, he had it was shortly, I think it was before Worthy's time even became official, but he was talking about the guys that have tested in a sub 4.3 range, right? So you had John Ross. We know John Ross was just completely short-circuited by having terrible knees. At one point, he had a 500-yard season going through 8 games, and then, you know, but injuries dragged him down. Ultimately, he was out of the league. But you've got some exciting plays from John Ross. John Ross would have been, I think, a good player had it not been for the injuries. The problem is, you get into it, the injuries were kind of known before he was drafted. We don't have that with Worthy. So the next guy, Kalen Barnes, I mean, he was not a good prospect, other than the fact that he ran a 40. Nobody even knew what to do with him. He wasn't a good cornerback, and so could he be a good special teamer? It didn't work out. He ran a 4.23. Then you got Chris Johnson. I mean, obviously, he had a fantastic career, 4.24. You got Dre Archer at 4.26. They didn't know what to do with him. He was a small running back in college, and so he didn't really have a defined role going into the NFL. That's a problem. You got Tariq Woolen, or now he goes by Rick. He ran a 4.26, had a great rookie year. Not as great second year, but I think still a pretty good player there. DJ Turner ran a 4.26 in 2023. The book's still out on him because he's a young player. Marquise Goodwin had a pretty good career. I think he was the day 3 pick after running a 4.27, but he's been around the league for a long time. And you got Henry Ruggs, who was off to a good start till he got into that tragic car accident where, you know, he made a horrible decision that ruined, you know, ended a life and ruined his, at least for the time being. And then you got some guys, Jacoby Ford. He was definitely overdrafted from what we saw production-wise. He didn't have nearly the production that Worthy had. You had J.J. Nelson, kind of same deal. Also, he was even skinnier than Worthy and shorter. And even he had his moments. He ran a 4.28. What round did they take J.J.? Fifth round?
Yeah, fifth round.
Uh-huh. But he wasn't, I mean, for a fifth-round pick, he was not a terrible
great
player.
Great fifth-round pick. I mean, when you get 5 years out of a guy mm-hmm. and 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns, like that's impressive. Most guys, what is the average NFL career, 2.5 years?
Something like that.
Double that with 1,500 yards and
yeah, and some big plays along the way in the NFL. You know, I used to just completely dump on guys that were this skinny and small, but I think the game's changed in the last 4 or 5 years.
Well,
a lot of skinny guys get picked.
Well, and it's just not as physical. You're not allowed to.
Yeah, they're going to call penalties. So that's one thing I think people are missing. And then, yeah, Jalen Myrick didn't really do anything with – he ran a 4.28. Tyquan Thornton, 4.28, another guy who's been, you know, snake bit with injuries. And you got Nate Wiggins, who is so snake bit with injuries, he got injured running his 40. Hip flexor, he's expected to be okay for the pro day. And then Zedrick Woods at 4.29. So my point is, first of all, this isn't a terrible list as much as people want it to be. You could take any block of guys from a point, you know, from a tenth of a second range of the 40 time and find guys that were good and guys that weren't. This is rare for guys to run sub 4.3, so this list is smaller than if you took the guys between 4.3 and 4.39, right? But how many of these guys had 1,000 yards as a true freshman? How many of these guys had the type of production and the touchdown scoring that Worthy's had? And then you hear a lot about Worthy dropping passes, but I think that's part of that memory is from 2022 when he was playing through a broken hand. And we didn't know that until after the season, until I think about 3 months after the season ended. He had 3 drops in that bowl game that year after sophomore year. And people, it seems stuck in people's mind, but he was playing with a broken hand and he played through it. So this concern about his weight, I get it. He's going to be a lot smaller than the guys on the field with him, but he's also a lot faster. And I think this is a player who, in this case, is not only the fastest guy on the field, but also a very good player, a very good football player. And I think that's what's being missed with this. So don't let the fact that he ran a fast 40 and that this group that ran that fast is small. It's a small sample and not everyone hit. Yeah, nobody's saying that a 4.2 plus 40 is a guarantee. But in this case, you have a guy who runs a 4.2 40 who's actually productive at receiver and productive as a return man. And I think Worthy is going to go. Mel Kiper said on First Draft Podcast, he could see Worthy going as high as 15 to 20. I tweeted out kind of tongue-in-cheek that Worthy was going to be a top 15 pick after he ran that 4.2 1. But I do think he's going to be a first-round pick now. And I think he'll go ahead of a couple of guys that people are probably ranking above him at this point.
When you look at the draft, part of what ended up being kind of difficult, I guess would be the right answer, is that a lot of guys just didn't test. We did get measurements for a number of guys, but to not get just any numbers whatsoever from some guys, that was a little different, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And when obviously Marvin Harrison made news because he came in and weighed in with the first group. So a few days before all the other receivers weighed in, he weighed in, did his interviews. I believe he did the medical and then he left. And then Caleb Williams did, he weighed in. He did not do the medical, but he did do the interviews with the press, which Marvin didn't do. And those were kind of making news. And then on Saturday, that day rolls around, we already knew that these guys were not going to test, but it was Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers, two college teammates, making news by not even weighing in. Not even weighing in. So my question to you is, we saw Devontae Smith do this, and it didn't hurt his draft stock. He was still drafted, I believe, in the top 12, if I'm recalling correctly.
He was still an early first round pick. Yeah, I think 11.
And that was with some other really good receivers in his draft class. So he didn't weigh in. That didn't hurt him. But Nabers and Daniels not weighing in, not being measured. Why do you suppose they did that?
I think it's just that they don't have to.
Now, you told me something interesting over the weekend. I would like you to bring that to our audience, because there's a rumor out there about Nabers.
Yeah, the rumor is that he's going to measure in less than 5'11". So does that change your opinion of the... Like, here's my thing, is that we knew Marvin Harrison wasn't going to be 6'4". But he came in at 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
I think he was listed at 205, right?
And he came in at 209.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a big thing. And so to be 1 inch shorter is never unexpected, right? Like, you know.
No, lots of guys came in 1 or 2 inches shorter.
Yeah, you're always going to lie about
that. Xavier Leggett came in at the Senior Bowl at 6'1", when he was listed at 6'3".
Right.
And that was backed up by the combine measurement. So, yeah, I mean, does it make a difference if you're 5'10"? I mean, we've seen, or say you're 5'10 and a half or whatever. We've seen quite a few guys. Again, we've seen receivers that are small, and they're still ultra productive. Why? This one was weird to me because, for one, it's teammates. And for two, it's like you can't run from this forever. Are they going to measure at the pro day, or are they just not going to measure at all?
You 100% can run from this. And that's what they're going to do. I mean,
I think the only guy that could really run from it was Xavier Worthy.
Right, exactly. But that's the thing, is you kind of hit it. Like,
somebody's going to measure these guys eventually.
But if they're already drafted, then they don't care.
Right, so, but don't you think in the team visits, those teams are going to want...
Probably.
Yeah, because neither one of these guys is number one pick, right?
And at that point, it's not going to come out unless it's a team that wants them to fall to them at some point, right?
Right, like, yeah.
No team's going to put out negative information on a guy just to put out negative information on a guy. So that was the rumors, that Nabers was going to come in under 5'11", under 200 pounds, which would put him in what you and I call jag territory for guys.
But there's always a lot of that. You know,
right.
Height,
and,
weight.
And height, weight, jag. Like, not, he's, we've never questioned whether he was good or not.
And, so. and you can watch the tape and you can tell he's fast. You know, he's going to at least be a 4.4 guy.
So that's my question, is if he's, I mean, that's the thing though, is like 5'10", let's say 195, that gets you into a different realm than the comparisons we've seen of Justin Jefferson, who was measured in at 6'1" and 202 pounds. But he was a mid 4.4 guy, like you said, and I think
Jefferson was 4.42?
4.43.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
4.43. And then, you know, another guy I've seen him draw comparisons to is like Reggie Wayne. But Wayne was 6'1 and 198 when he got measured, and he was a mid 4.4 guy as well. So it's not like these are like insane in terms of athletic testing, or but he could be up to 2 inches shorter than these guys, and I don't know how much of a difference that really makes.
Well, I don't think it makes a difference for those people that like him. But it might look odd if you have him as, like, say, the number one overall player in the whole class, like Lance Zierlein has, if he's a 5'10 and a half, 190-pound receiver. But I don't know. Maybe he has, like, super short arms. I never noticed anything about that in watching him. You and I speculated. I don't remember if we put it on Patreon or if we just, it was just a conversation between the two of us, but we thought Daniels would try and come in around 220 and then not run. And so then he doesn't even get measured or run.
So do you think that just was a fact that he weighed in the night before and he was like,
I'm too thin.
210, 205.
Well, I don't know. I mean, because nobody thinks he's not thin. Like, he's very clearly thin. So I don't really understand.
Don't believe your eyes.
It's funny because it reminds me of like an episode of Curb Your Own Enthusiasm where like they're flying a private jet to a wedding in Costa Rica or something like that. And Larry needs to know the weight of everybody that's on the plane, and everybody's embarrassed to tell him the weight. Like, even the people that are fit won't tell him how much they weigh. So I don't know. Maybe that's just a personal hang up. Or maybe, you know, we'll see. They might get measured and weighed at pro day, and all this will be nothing. And it'll just go to your earlier point that maybe some people are just trying to get rid of the combine.
When you look at the guys that did work out, one guy that impressed, depending on who you asked, was J.J. McCarthy.
A guy who came in at 219 and didn't run. So he did the Jaden Daniels strategy of...
But he did run...
He ran shuttles.
Yeah, and he had...
And they were good.
Yeah, he had like the fifth fastest shuttle time of anybody. Not just quarterbacks. Anybody.
That's actually a pretty good indicator for quarterbacks. Success. Yeah.
Came in a little bigger, like you said, 6'2.5". So he was listed at 6'3", came at 6'2.5", but 219 instead of 210.
I would have never guessed it. I mean, he literally weighs more than I do, and I would have never guessed that in a million years. I think it's distributed a little bit differently.
Yeah, he's built different.
Yeah. He's, to be fair, I'm like 20-some years older.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, you know, it was a good day for him. But then the throwing thing came into play, right?
So, yeah, I've seen a lot of people say that he had a really good day throwing the ball. But then there was a noticeable difficulty throwing to his left, which does show up on his tape as well. And I don't want to spook anybody or make it seem like I'm comparing the two as prospects, but that was a problem with Mitch Trubisky. That was a big problem with Mitch Trubisky that carried over into his NFL career. And the difference between the two guys is Trubisky was a guy who was just kind of riding the wave in college until he got the opportunity to start as a redshirt junior. And then he had a great year, and it got him up to the position to be the number two pick. But remember, when he started his rookie year, he was a couple years older than McCarthy's going to be. McCarthy just turned 21 about a month ago. So he is very young. He's the youngest quarterback in this class. And so you have to think about that as an evaluator. Like, is that something you can work with him on? He seems like a very driven person. J.J. McCarthy is all about the W's. He's known as a great leader.
Yeah, let me ask you a comparison, and then if that is somebody you would take in round one,
mm-hmm.
Could he be like a similar guy to like a Brock Purdy?
Yeah, and that's weird because Purdy was a four-year guy who also was pretty young coming out. No, I mean, that's a fair question. And I think JJ's actually more athletic than Purdy.
Yeah, I was going to say it that way, but I didn't want
to. Does he have a stronger arm too? I mean, I think he does.
Probably. I mean, it's so hard to tell.
There's a lot of really big arms in this class, and I don't think McCarthy's one of the top four or five biggest arms in the class, but he still can sling it. Like, right. I'm not worried about his arm strength. With him, it's just experience, lack of experience, and that's where this thing comes in. Like, Michigan's calling plays. They ran a lot more pro-style stuff than, I should say, quote-unquote pro-style stuff than other teams. But they also put McCarthy in the position to throw where he's most comfortable. We've talked about McCarthy, criticism of him not throwing as many pass attempts, but he was throwing plenty of pass attempts in the first half until Michigan put teams away. And then, you know, you have those anomalies like Penn State where the game wasn't really put away, but then they ran 32 times in a row. And, you know, you talk to Sharon Moore, their new head coach, and he said, you know, we just thought we could run it down their throats. Point proven, they did that. But I think that's why people are skeptical. The media is really high on J.J. McCarthy, though. They were really gassing him up the whole time. And if you watch the coverage, I think it's still quite. Some people are saying he could be quarterback 3. And they're not talking about ahead of Daniels. They're talking about ahead of May. I just don't buy that at all. But could you buy him over Nix and Penix and Rattler? I could definitely buy that because he's 3 years younger than those guys. So yeah, you're looking at an upside play. So, you know, I like J.J. McCarthy. I think he's pretty good. And the more I watched him, the more I thought, yeah, this guy can make the throws. I'm not worried about his athleticism at all, and I'm not worried about his leadership. People love this guy. Everyone around the Michigan program thinks the world of him. And he doesn't seem cocky or arrogant. He seems unassuming. I know a family member who had a personal interaction with him playing golf and speaks highly of him. And the guy's so McCarthy was so unassuming. He never let on like who he was. It was never about that. He's just... They just ended up golfing together, just randomly. So that's just an anecdote. I mean, I don't know. The not throwing left thing is weird because he was definitely sailing throws. And then I was listening to all the post combine draft podcasts today, and kind of prepping for this show, and just really trying to get some takes. I tweeted out a couple of them. If you follow me at AFC to NFC. But, you know, I think he will be able to throw left. I think he's young enough that you can work on these things with him. And I always kind of just bristle at the idea that these guys that are coming out of college, they just have to know everything. They have to know how to run routes and how to throw this pass as if they don't practice, as if Tom Brady didn't exist. And I'm not comparing anyone to that, but clearly... If you get into the league and you're driven and you work hard and you have a baseline of talent, there are things you could do to improve. It's not like you're a finished product. So, you know, to me, McCarthy's probably quarterback 4 or 5. I'm not really settled yet. I'm still kind of going back and forth. But and it's because some of these other quarterbacks threw the ball well this week too.
Yeah. When you look at this weekend, it was... quite interesting that one guy that kind of caught everybody by surprise was Ben Sinnott, the Kansas State tight end prospect. Came in at 6'4", 250. Good size for a tight end. 4'6", 840, you know, nothing to write home about.
And pretty good for a tight end, though.
Yeah. It's a very good overall, but it's not like it's, you know, it was not, I don't even think it was top 3.
It wasn't, but I would classify it as above average. Correct. Which is what we're looking for.
But then things got weird. You know, when you look at the vertical, Sinnott hit 40 on the vertical.
That's at 250. Can you imagine?
When you look at the broad jump, he hit
10. I don't think you and I could combine to hit 40 on the vertical.
I can lift you to 40. I'm still not allowed to jump that much, so yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
on the broad jump, he hit 10.6, which is 126 inches total, mm-hmm. for those counting at home. His three cone was 6.82.
That's like absurd.
The same as J.J. McCarthy's, by the way.
Which you said was the fifth or sixth best of anybody?
Yeah. His 20-yard shuttle was 4.23, which... ended up being the third best in this class, which means these guys can move.
It also means a lot of guys didn't run the shuttle.
Well, no, just in the tight end class.
Okay, okay, yeah.
Third best in the tight end class.
Yeah, these tight ends, there are a lot of them. Well, I think we're going to touch on at least one or two more.
Yeah, but Sinnott, you know, you look at his production, you look at the things he did at Kansas State, especially with new Ohio State quarterback. What's
Will Howard.
Yeah, Will Howard.
Well, I mean, how many catches did he have? Because Howard's obviously going to be first-round pick next year.
The last 2 years, Sinnott has combined for 80 catches for 1,123 yards and 10 touchdowns.
And that's really good for a college tight end.
Yeah, I mean, that's really spectacular production. Has he vaulted himself into the day two talk at this point?
I think because Ben Sinnott also... And correct me if I'm wrong, but he had a strong Senior Bowl too.
Yes.
So you've got a guy now who is basically knocking the draft process out of the park. Big Senior Bowl, kind of unknown, you know, relative unknown. Goes to the Senior Bowl, knocks it out of the park, gets great reports from practices, goes to the combine, kills it. He's still only, he doesn't turn 22 until June, so he's got youth on his side. His size at 6'4", 250 is pretty average for a tight end, but that's fine. You know, if you can get average size, that's good.
Elite athleticism.
Yeah, and average size. You're talking about a top 30 combine over the last 20 years for a tight end. So you think of all the tight ends that have tested in the last 20 years, and he's in the top 30. You know, the guys like that don't last. This is a pretty decent tight end class. It's not like last year, but a lot of people have pitched this as Brock Bowers and just a bunch of other guys. Well, Ben Sinnott has now elevated himself outside of the other guys. So now you've got Brock Bowers, Jatavion Sanders, I like very much. Out of Texas. And then you got Ben Sinnott. And then you got Theo Johnson. Cade Stover had a pretty good combine. He's a little older than these guys. But Sinnott's the youngest of these guys I've mentioned. And at that size, with that speed, with that quickness, that's going to help a lot. We know Kansas State kind of runs some smash mouth stuff. So I'm going to have to take a look at the tape closer and just make sure that this guy knows how to block, because that is what gets the young tight ends on the field earliest and often. But you look at a guy like Sam Laporta, just had the biggest rookie season by a tight end ever. You look at Kincaid for Buffalo, had a good rookie season, had 80 catches. People are willing to, I think, inject these young tight ends into the offense a little bit more readily now. There's a lot of cost-saving measures that NFL teams consider and things like that. So if Ben Sinnott can block well enough, he's going to get on the field early. I think he's definitely going to go on day two.
So you look at it, and I you know, obviously it's not a guarantee or anything like that, but the names in front of him that had better jumps, Jared Cook. So
long, okay, had a good long career.
Yeah, Mike Gesicki, obviously still playing. Vernon Davis, we won't go that far things, but
Sinnott didn't run a 4.35 or whatever.
But obviously, you know, a great tight end over his career. Virgil Green, who played for a decade. So the only outlier was actually the best of all of them, and that was Doran Dickerson. But I just did incredible research on my end. Dickerson was sub 230 when he
did this. Dickerson was more like an H-back, almost a wide receiver. So at 6'2", 228. That's not, it doesn't fit.
I just don't like that, because the other guys, and again, it's not an indication that he's going to be a star by any means or anything, but I think it does indicate when you test that well, when you have that type of athleticism, you can have a long career. You know, and if the worst you get out of this guy is an 11-year NFL career a la Virgil Green, okay, so he's not going to make any Pro Bowls. But that's a very good usage of things. And you know, that's something we can talk about at the end, because I actually got asked that question today about just draft philosophy. So we'll touch on that later.
Yeah. Also, we're going to get more into the comps when we get some of the tools that we use, get like caught up with all these numbers. But yeah, that's good that you threw a few comparable numbers out there already.
Tarion Arnold was gifted kind of from Big Draft.
I think we did a show recently where he was the number one defensive player on the board. I think that was our show on Patreon last week.
And eighth overall prospect, down from six overall, which always makes you wonder what if they knew what was coming.
Right? I don't know. That's just such a slight drop. I think it was more like hyping up more receivers.
But that's what I was going to say. What had happened that like led to him falling one spot or two spots in the draft? And then he came out and he had fine testing. I mean, nothing crazy.
His jumps were above average for a corner, but
yeah, his jumps were not bad.
That 40, he ran a 4. I believe the unofficials were like 4.54 and 4.51. He ends up with an official 4.5. Are you worried about him now?
No, I mean, that's the thing.
You actually tweeted about him, and one of our friends of the show didn't recognize your Twitter handle and called you a dork. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I don't, you know me, I don't really care. There's a reason I don't get on the X anymore.
That's why he didn't remember you, because you're never tweeting. Yeah. Or posting, whatever they call it.
Let me ask you this. So he's getting Jalen Johnson comps. And I'm fine with that. I'm actually okay with
that. And Jalen Johnson was a second-round pick?
Yeah, 49th overall. And so that's what my question becomes. So you got a guy 6 foot, 189. Johnson came in at 6 foot, 193. No difference there. Arm length is virtually similar. 31 and 3/8 for Johnson, 31 and 5/8.
And that's fine for a corner. It's not extraordinary. But it's above average. It's average. It's average arm length.
It's average. Hand size, he has 8 7/8 inch hands, so under 9 inches.
Real quick, all these corners have small hands. I mean, I was taken aback. So many corners this year under 9 inch hands, and it just made me think, oh, that's why they're playing corner.
Right.
Because they're not running 4.2s.
Right. And you look at it, he did do the vertical 37 inches. Jalen Johnson was 36.5. So, you know, he's that put Jalen Johnson in the 61st percentile. So I'm guessing that puts Arnold in like the 65th percentile.
Something like that.
Broad jump was 124 for Jalen Johnson. Arnold's broad jump was better. He hit 10.9, which is 129.
So which is actually really good. I mean,
5 inches better. It's
like
really good.
Super close to being like an elite level broad jump. And we like the broad jump. It shows explosiveness forward. That shows up on his tape, right? Because that's how he got a lot of the interceptions, is he kind of baits the quarterback and then breaks on the ball.
Yeah, and so you look at it, the numbers actually kind of highlight what you actually see on tape, and that's...
I think so, too, yeah.
You know, he's not ideal covering deep. That's not where he...
Didn't he actually play in the slot before this year?
Yes. And so when you look at what he can do, I think our pushback all along was, is he really corner one? And people are going to say, well, Jalen Johnson is a all pro or borderline all pro. I don't remember what. But it's always weird when we're definitely saying that Jalen Johnson was drafted incorrectly and he should have been a top or a first round pick. I mean, should he have been the first corner off the board?
Didn't Jalen Johnson go to Indiana?
No, he went to Utah.
Utah, that's my bad. But so he didn't carry the famous SEC tax.
Right.
And which, so, you got an Alabama guy. It's, and Alabama has produced a lot of impressive corners. You got a little tax to pay if you want Arnold.
So is he a top? That was just my question. Is like, is this a guy you take in the top 10?
I don't think so. I think he's still a player who's in the mix for cornerback one. You look at the ball production in the SEC, and you look at the fact that he's a redshirt sophomore too.
Yeah, we were wrong. Sorry. He did play mostly wide corner last year. He played more slot this year. He had 200 snaps. Last year, he only had 11.
In the slot?
Yeah.
Okay, so then so this year is where he made his money in the slot.
Yeah.
Okay, so that kind of goes along with what we're saying. But that doesn't mean he's not a first-round pick, because we see how teams play, and most teams are they're playing three corners frequently now because of the way the offenses are. And again, like I mentioned, Arnold is a redshirt sophomore. He was born in March of 03, if you want to feel old. Maybe some of you are much younger than we are, but still, March of 03, so he won't turn 21 until just before the draft. I think there's more of a conversation now about who's the cornerback one than there was before this past week. But I still think Arnold is in the mix. And there was a lot that I liked on his tape. You know, I loved the ball recognition. I loved the way he baited quarterbacks into throwing when he had a good angle on the ball. And 4-5 is still, we get so disillusioned, but 4-5 is still fast. It's still a fast guy. So the concern is going to be, is he going to get grabby if he's facing some of these freaky receivers that are coming into the league running 4-3s? And so that's always going to be a concern, but the great corners adjust and position themselves and are able to, get their hands on guys in such a way that to redirect them, to slow them down. You know, we talked about a lot of these receivers being light, and Arnold at 189, not really a thick guy, but has a little more heft on him than some of these receivers coming out. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not worried about his combine personally.
So let me ask you this. And, you know, we're not going to say that we, like, subscribe heavily to the PFF grades, and because I think those are...
I would even go so far as to say that I haven't seen them.
Okay. So those are fairly subjective. But let me ask you this. His five worst games, Terrion Arnold. Michigan. Texas. Georgia. LSU. And then Tennessee. So
we're talking about Roman Wilson. We're talking about Brian Thomas and Neighbors. We're talking about A.D. Mitchell and Worthy. Is that where you're going?
Yeah.
Ladd McConkey.
And Brock Bowers. So should that be more concerning than the alternative, which is, oh, well, he didn't have a great, you know, combine.
Well, I'd have to look at it more specifically in terms of matchups, because off the top of my head, I don't have to
dive in real heavy.
But I would say this, too. I mean, you just said his worst games were against a bunch of high first-round picks.
Right.
So if anything, it might tell me that the collective draft scouts, have maybe overrated a guy, said he's a top 10 pick when maybe he might be a top 50 pick, like Jalen Johnson. But still a good player, right?
Right. And that was kind of my question on the whole subject, because...
And I think he's got competition now, extreme competition from...
Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah, Quinyon Mitchell. Two of the fastest guys in this class are Mitchells. But Quinyon Mitchell, 4.33, 40, and then you got all the on-ball production. And I know you and I were texting about this. Is it crazy that, like, two of the, like, I know Sauce Gardner, I was reminded, thank you to our buddy Lake Effect Bro for reminding me that Sauce Gardner wasn't the first corner picked, but actually was picked after Derek Stingley, who also was very good. But to have a group of five corner go that high, and now you're going to see Quinyon Mitchell possibly be the top corner in this draft. Group of five is cranking out some pretty good corners, where there's always been that question about level of competition. But Quinyon Mitchell, another guy, had did some impressive things against top competition. I think he was another Senior Bowl standout, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, and now just a fantastic combine. So, yeah, like, I'm not worried about Terry Arnold's combine. I'm just saying he might not be corner one.
Yeah, and that was the question all along. It wasn't that, like, he's bad.
No.
But people,
I think he's still the best corner coming out of Alabama. And yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get to see Kool-Aid run because
he has a broken foot.
Yeah, they found a Jones fracture in his foot. But I have more questions about Kool-Aid in terms of speed. And now his health, obviously, that's a question. But I have more questions about Kool-Aid than I do about Arnold. But ultimately, I kind of think they're in the same range as a prospect.
Are you buying or selling?
I want to get to the wide receiver. Okay.
Are you buying or selling Rome Odunze as wide receiver three, or did anybody do enough to push him down the list?
I see. So, okay. Yeah, you threw that back on me. But so I tweeted this earlier because I was listening to some of these draft podcasts to see what Big Draft is saying, right? And Rick Spielman was on the With the First Pick podcast. And I think he's the regular host. I don't listen to a lot of draft stuff, but I did today because I wanted to get the post-combine reactions. Because, frankly, I was looking for hot takes. So Rick Spielman on With the First Pick podcast, he was the first mainstream person I've seen covering the NFL draft. Because we've talked about it, you and I have talked about it, especially on our Patreon shows, that Odunze, why is he the de facto wide receiver three after Harrison and Neighbors? Well, Rick Spielman was the first one I heard suggest that Odunze's got competition for three, and he specifically mentioned Brian Thomas. And then I threw in, you know, could it be A.D. Mitchell, who just had a fantastic combine? And honestly, if you look at Thomas and Mitchell, I think there were a lot of similarities between the combines. I don't think they're particularly, even though they're like similar size, I don't think they play the same game. But to me, Mitchell or Thomas is like the deep threat burner guy. And I'm just kind of going off the top of my head, like a Martavis Bryant type, where he's like the lanky deep threat, but I think probably a better prospect than Bryant was, more productive and 4.33 speed. But then you had Mitchell running 4.34, and their jumps are really similar. 38.5 for Thomas, 10.6 broad jump. And then you had Mitchell 39.5 on the vert, and he had an 11-foot, 4-inch broad jump. These guys even have the same birth date, October 8th, 2002. Which is just a few months younger than Rome Odunze. So my answer to that is I do buy that Odunze has competition for wide receiver three, but I could also see Odunze going wide receiver two. I did find it interesting that Lance Erline, in his mock draft that he just released the day after the combine ended, he has Odunze as wide receiver three, but being drafted now 12th overall. And we've generally been seeing Odunze in the top 10, haven't we?
Yeah, and that's been kind of consensus that he'll go, you know, at worst at 9 to the Bears.
So in this case, Zerline had the Bears trading somebody traded up to 9 to draft a quarterback, and the Bears traded back to 12 and still land Odunze. That's probably a great scenario for Chicago fans because
I will give you another scenario that's even better in a second.
Okay. So we've talked at length about Odunze. I didn't want to get into him too much on this podcast other than to say he did have a really good combine. But the two guys I just mentioned, A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas, in my opinion, they had better combines in terms of the testing. Odunze was supposedly a 4.34 guy. According to Bruce Feldman's freak list, he ran a 4.45. The jumps were good, 39 inches.
Which is still very good.
It's real good. I mean, for a guy that weighs 212 pounds, it's very good. 39-inch vertical. But then a little bit less on the broad, 10.4, which is still above average, but just slightly. It's just borderline. Great shuttles for Rome Odunze. And you know, to be completely honest, because I've been a skeptic, and only because of how highly he's rated, like Daniel Jeremiah saying he's the number 3 overall player in the whole class, that kind of gets my antenna up. But really great combine by Odunze, and those shuttle times, and it shows up when he runs. He does look very smooth, but my problem has always been that he doesn't just get as much separation as these other guys. And you know, it goes back to my point earlier, maybe about the college offense versus the pro offense. That stuff's all going to play out, but I don't fault anybody for wanting to, you know, grasp at the upside of Brian Thomas or A.D. Mitchell. Now, what I will say is, and one of my followers, a mutual follower on Twitter, said, you know, he felt that Odunze was still better than those guys as a prospect because he has a safer floor. And that's a point I can kind of jive with. But if we're in gambling here, the draft is gambling. So the gambler in me wants to hit on the upside of guys like Thomas and Mitchell. So I do buy it. I do buy that there's competition. And to hear Rick Spielman say that, a guy who is known as a good GM, that made me feel a little bit better. I'm not going to lie.
Are you buying or selling these views coming out of the combine? Troy Franklin's stock down.
I'm buying that Troy Franklin's stock is down, but I'm not quitting on Troy Franklin because the main reason his stock is down is the post-testing drills where he ran a kind of a sloppy gauntlet. He didn't run it down straight line down the middle. He did catch everything that was thrown to him, and you know, maybe he didn't run quite as fast as we thought because he ran a 4.41. What a slacker, right? The other thing about Franklin is, oh, he weighed 176 pounds. Well, we already knew he was thin. And again, being thin doesn't disqualify you as a good receiver pick. We've seen guys like Olave, Wilson, Jameson Williams, Jordan Addison, they've all had success to varying degrees. Jameson probably, you know, the rockiest start to his career because of an injury and then the gambling suspension, which should have never happened. And that's a topic for another day. But he showed when he came back and played that he can be that explosive guy. So if Troy Franklin, you know, maybe this is my take, is that he's going to fall out of the first round because some of these other guys push themselves ahead of him. But it doesn't dissuade me from thinking that Troy Franklin is one of the top 6 or 7 receivers in this draft. Obviously, very productive Pac-12 player. Did it at a young age. He just turned 21, too. And I remember Garrett Wilson. They said the same thing about his gauntlet. Like, don't let that take away. That's not playing football. Watch these guys play football. And the one thing I'll say is, like, Garrett Wilson to me was more physical, a better, like, catch point guy than Troy Franklin, but I still think Franklin has that inherent ability to get open, and he's just so fast on the field. He's just incredibly fast, and I think that he's actually, you know, 4.41 is really, really fast. And some of these guys running 4.2s and 4.3s takes your eye off the ball. But when you get down to it, you've still got a really fast guy. And I really just don't have any concerns with him at the next level. I get why people think he's riskier than Odunze. But to me, I think he still has the higher upside. The one thing is, like, he's got small hands. And I guess there's a contingent out there that thinks that he might have some drops, but I just don't see it. I think he's going to be fine.
When you look at other stock down, the other interesting one was Keon Coleman. To me, the bigger stock down of this wasn't necessarily the 4.6 140. Because he's a big athlete and he plays bigger, but I think it was him coming in at only 6'3 and 213 pounds, and then running a 4.6 140, right? Like,
yeah.
If he had been 6'5 220ish, like they were saying, I think you're okay with 4.61 and you kind of just move along from there. But to get to be and only 6'3 is, it's not a slight. It's just a, you know, conversation about the whole situation. But to only be 6'3, only 213 pounds, and then hit 4.61. I know he had a really good gauntlet in terms of his miles per hour.
He was the fastest of any receiver to run the gauntlet, getting over 20 miles an hour. Yeah.
Is that a reason to stock down?
Is 4.61 a reason to stock down?
I'm less concerned with the 4.61 than I am the 4.61 at
213.
Yeah.
Where he's not like 6'4", 220. Yeah. So I get that too. And you have the production tail off too. Yeah. Especially, you know, after, I know it happened very late in the year, but Travis getting hurt. I'm buying Coleman stock down, but we're talking about, you and I talked about Coleman all season when he was, remember, he was at one point projected as the wide receiver too, and as a top 10 pick. That did not materialize. But if you are a team picking in the early second and you get Keon Coleman, I think you're getting a steal, because this is a fantastic athlete, a guy who was so good that he could play D1 basketball. And I really thought his jumps would be higher, but that's like 38-inch vertical and a 10.7 broad is still really good. And then to see, this is a case where to see that gauntlet, it's not really like a make or break thing for me, but it is an interesting point that somebody made, where I think it was Charles Davis on the broadcast, where he says he's running that fast through the gauntlet. It shows that he has trust in his hands. And then when you watched him do some of the fade route drills, he's so like agile for a guy that's that big. I think he's going to be fine. And Keon Coleman's one of the youngest receivers in this draft. He hasn't turned 21 yet. He won't turn 21 till May. So after the draft, I'm buying that stock is down, but to the advantage of teams picking at the top of the second round, because this is still really, I mean, we are talking about a historically good receiver class. I could name probably 10 guys in this class that I'm really confident that aren't going to bust. Doesn't mean they're going to be Pro Bowlers, but they're not going to be flops. There's no, like, there's, to me, there's no Darius Hayward Bay or Jonathan Baldwin in this group. This is a group that's, I think, going to be very successful down the line.
Ricky Pearsall, stock up. Are we talking day two now?
They are talking day two, and by they, I mean big draft. And he is a freaky athlete, man. A 42-inch vertical, 6.64-second three-cone, which was the fastest, I believe, anybody who did the three-cone this past week, and then a 4.41-40. He is that Jag size, like you talked about, like you alluded to earlier. 6'1", 189. And Pearsall was a transfer to Florida, correct?
From Arizona State, yeah.
From Arizona State, right in your backyard. Herm Edwards apparently has nothing but high praise for Ricky Pearsall. But it's really interesting. My antenna always goes up when a guy is not talked about as a day two pick all year until after the combine. And that's what's happening here. And you got to keep in mind, Ricky Pearsall turns 24 in September. So he is 3 full years older than Malik Nabers, Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman. He's 2.5 to 3 years older than these guys. And so I would bristle at picking him above some of the younger guys. Especially because he's not particularly tall or big. His arms are shorter than the average receiver, under 31-inch arms. So your catch radius is smaller. We've seen him make acrobatic catches. I don't deny Ricky Pearsall's athletic ability. I mean, if you've watched some of the clips that have been tweeted out there or that are on YouTube, this guy can do a windmill dunk. I mean, he can sky. He's a fantastic athlete, but I think you have to factor in all the other things, the production, which was fine. It was about average for throughout his career, but the age, he's way older than all of these guys. He's even a year, he's like a year older than, he's a little less than a year older than like Roman Wilson and Jermaine Burton and, you know, Luke McCaffrey. He's like a year and a half older than Brendan Rice. Yeah, I think that has to factor in.
Can I give you a comp?
Sure.
You're going to hate this, by the way. Anthony Gonzalez.
I don't hate it because Anthony Gonzalez had no business being a first-round pick.
So Gonzalez was 6'1", 193, so, I mean, virtually the same. Pearsall was slightly faster, and I do mean slightly. He was Gonzalez ran a 4.44. Pearsall ran a 4.41. Now, it's hard to find comps that measure because of that vertical and that broad are so good. That Gonzalez's three cone was better. But Pearsall's,
that's hard to believe. It was better than 6.64?
6.54.
Wow.
So Pearsall had better jumps. Gonzalez had a better three cone, short shuttle, basically the same. 4.08 for Gonzalez, 4.05 for Pearsall. You know, you said it, and obviously the issue with Gonzalez had nothing to do with ability. It was his brain was scrambled eggs after what? Two seasons.
I think you're thinking of the other Colts receivers, but yeah, Gonzalez had his own injury issues, and you know, both guys kind of moderately productive on their college teams.
Yeah, and that's why I don't mind the comp, because it seems like we're drafting these guys based on what they could be with their athleticism that we don't see very often.
Well, and also one of the things that we as draft analysts don't always, we talk about it kind of in passing, but we don't weigh it as heavily as it really is. And that is teams drafting based on strictly on the fit for their team.
Right.
And so that's where you see a guy like Anthony Gonzalez, who was a good college player for Ohio State, but any Ohio State fan would have thought he would have been like a third-round pick. And so I think if you're being realistic with Pearsall, to me, he's like third or fourth round pick, which is still a really good player. And there are, you know, 15 receivers that are in that category this year, which is, again, just speaks to the depth of the class. But it doesn't mean that you need to. Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to certainly reach for an Anthony Gonzalez, right? It's just I think some of the testing now, because these guys are so athletic and they're so well trained, it skews what kind of player they actually are. And I think with Pearsall, you've got really good marks on route running and polish. And part of that might be a product of being a 24-year-old playing a college game. But I think the guy is good. I think he's going to be a good player. I think if he lands in the right spot, I mean, 2 years ago, everyone would have said he's a Patriot, right?
Right.
And now Tom Brady's gone, Bill Belichick's gone. We got now what, is he a Ram?
Exactly.
But it's going to depend on where he goes to. And we've seen freakish testers to varying degrees of their route running ability still get juiced from these events. Certainly he looked good in shorts, and except for his haircut, man. He had a straight up bowl haircut. I don't know if you saw that, but that drops him at least two rounds for me. Let's talk about Ladd McConkey, and then do you have a hot take for us?
I do.
Okay, so let's talk about Ladd McConkey. We had a lot more planned for tonight, but we're running long, like I said. So we'll table some of this for our Patreon show later in the week. And also, you and I will be doing the Rise Up See Red podcast this week with Jess Root too, right?
Yes.
So you can listen to us talk about draft all week. So we'll talk about Ladd McConkey real quick. I gotta back off my McConkey stuff. This guy's actually legitimately very good. And my problem was the production wasn't really there. I know there's an injury history, which has to be taken into account. And I still wouldn't draft him as high as I think he's going to get drafted, which I think he has a chance of getting into the back of the first round if seven receivers go. Okay. And I'll say that's saying Harrison, Neighbors, Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Romo Dunze are already gone. And that was in no order. That was just the top six guys in most people's estimations. Would it be shocker to see McConkey go at the back end of round one? I don't think so anymore, because there's that team drafting at the last pick, the Kansas City Chiefs, that could go in a number of different directions, and McConkey would probably be a really good fit for Mahomes. But this guy, man, I was really impressed how crisp his routes are. He is truly a technician when it comes to routes, and that wouldn't sway me so much as the fact that he is also a 4.39 guy, and I really didn't think he was going to be. I thought he'd run about a tenth of a second slower. I was a little disappointed we didn't get shuttles on him, because I think they would have been fantastic, but he didn't do it. But McConkey's kind of grown on me, and when I watched him, he was one of the guys that popped to me at the combine. And I don't want to put too much stock in this, and I'm not saying I jumped him up way above where I had him, but I did move him up a little bit. And one concern, which is mild, he's going to be 23 in the middle of his rookie year. But that's not that unusual, especially for a day two guy. I wouldn't take him in the first round, but I could see some team falling in love with him. He still has short arms and small hands. I mean, he has very short arms, only just slightly over 30 inch. And tiny hands, 8 5/8 inches. So just a little bit bigger than Kenny Pickett's.
So, buddy of ours, Blake Murphy, been on the show, talk to him all the time.
Our good pal. He's, yep.
Yeah, he's got a
interest. He does for he writes for Revenge of the Birds too, right?
He does.
Yeah.
He's got a very
great site. Even if you're not into the Cardinals. Yeah, I'm endorsing your site, Seth.
Appreciate that. This is an interesting one.
Is this our hot take?
Yeah, so this is and it's speculation, obviously. But and I'm trying to find exactly how he worded it. Yeah, so he's quote tweeting Josh Norris's post. Josh Norris said, "I had a very smart GM tell me 1, 2, 3, 4 for QBs in the 2024 NFL draft." That was from Diana Rossini of ESPN, I believe. Or is she with The Athletic now? With The Athletic now.
Yeah, Athletic.
So that would mean that the Arizona Cardinals are taking quarterback? No, I guess that would mean that they're trading from 4. And the question is,
how far back?
Who's coming up, right?
Yeah.
Who's coming up?
Who's coming up and how far back are your Arizona Cardinals trading back?
So the conversation is the Arizona Cardinals trade back to 6 with the New York Football Giants. So the Giants, who've basically let Adam Schefter let everybody know that they're done with Daniel Jones, which is always fun.
Well, I'd like to get Jim Nagy's take on that. Because he was adamant that we were all stupid when we said Daniel Jones was not even close to a first-round quarterback. I guess that's a topic for another day.
Right. And so quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and 4. I'm assuming 4 is J.J. McCarthy at that point, or maybe Drake May based on all these crazy
reports. Yeah, because we actually saw Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports. I referenced his podcast with Rick Spielman earlier, but he had McCarthy going quarterback 3, which, by the way, Rick Spielman kind of laughed him off on that.
And this is absurd to me as well. And we just praised J.J. McCarthy. We just, you know, compared him to a guy that just took his team to a Super Bowl.
As everyone knows, I'm an Ohio State grad, and I still had nice things to say about J.J. McCarthy. So, I mean, that should tell you we try and be, like, really objective here.
But him going 4 feels absurd, right?
I don't know, man. It's kind of like, I mean, yes, to answer your question, yes. But it's like you asked me, is he Brock Purdy? And then you would have people doing a redraft of that draft class and probably mocking Brock Purdy in the top 4. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's recency bias. We talk, one of the things, if you are a longtime listener, and I hope you are, we talked about Antonio Brown being a 5th-round pick and how so many people wanted to find the next Antonio Brown in the first round. And recall us saying, finding Antonio Brown in the 5th round is good scouting. Trying to find Antonio Brown in the 1st round is not. It's not good scouting. So if you think McCarthy's Brock Purdy, you don't draft that guy 4th overall.
So the consensus mock draft has the Los Angeles Chargers taking Brock Bowers or Joe Alt at 5 because they don't feel like that they can take Marvin Harrison Jr. at 5 or Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze because obviously sunk cost fallacy of Quentin Johnston. So
can you imagine not taking Marvin Harrison Jr. because you took Quentin Johnston?
So and so
like isn't that I mean,
yeah, but this is Blake's semi-hot take.
Okay.
Semi-like. He said, again, the funniest outcome is AZ jumps back to 6, and then, you know, they take Harrison or Alt or Neighbors or whoever, and the Chargers can't move back and aren't taking the wide receiver, so they just end up getting Marvin Harrison Jr., probably the best player in the draft at 6, and get another second-round pick from the New York Giants. honest question, is it impossible is a strong word, but like, can they pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. at five if quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4?
Can San Diego? I mean, L.A.?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's hard for me to picture Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jim Harbaugh together. But also, Harbaugh is not a stupid guy. And he has seen Marvin Harrison Jr. up close and personal for the last few years. I don't ever see, especially there's a new coach, new GM, and I don't think they give a damn about Quentin Johnston if they have an opportunity to take a Harrison or Neighbors. Why would you?
My hot take on this whole thing is that the Chargers are going to take Talisi Fuaga at five, so it doesn't matter.
What about the guy from Washington? He had a combine like a tight end.
Yeah, but I just see.
And now they're saying he's kind of. I'm not comparing him to Rashawn Slater, but it's kind of the same idea because you had a guy they said, oh, he's too short. His arm's too short to play tackle. And then he actually isn't too short. And let me pull my spreadsheet up because I want to give this guy credit and get the name right. But we're talking about Troy Fautanu, right? Yeah. 6'4", 317, 34.5-inch arm. So no doubt that his arms are long enough. And he ran a 5.01 with 32.5-inch vertical. At 317, that's insane. And my only problem with him is that he just didn't start a lot of games, despite the fact that he is going to be 24 in October. But if you watch this guy's drills, he's running around like a tight end out there.
Right.
So, yeah, it would be funny. But, you know, what about the Chargers? I mean, this is really far-fetched, but I'm coming from Chicagoland here. There has been some mild speculation that Harbaugh wants McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's been put out into the ether, and that would be...
insane.
It would be insane. But if you can get, you know, a similar haul, if you're talking about, you know...
Deshaun Watson?
Chicago, or if you're talking about somebody in front of you at 1, 2, or 3 trading you that pick and then mm-hmm. also, you know, next year's first to get him, it's also it makes sense from a business standpoint because you've already paid him, you owe him a ton of money. It's a basically like, yeah, you're taking a cap hit, but you're also basically like resetting everything right for yourself.
I think that's insane. I'll put it out there. I mean, I really don't think Jim Harbaugh's trading Justin Herbert as much as he probably loves JJ McCarthy like a son.
Dude, that would literally be the craziest thing ever.
It would be. And it would also, I think people would start questioning his sanity.
Which is fair.
Which is it would be the most since Wilton Spate transferred to UCLA and told the media that Harbaugh told him not to eat, that told his players not to eat chicken, but to eat steak because chicken is a nervous bird, right? But I don't think Harbaugh is that kind of insane. I think he still recognizes that he's got Justin Herbert. And can you imagine Herbert paired with Marvin Harrison Jr.? Because I know Mike Williams is a free agent, right?
Yeah. I'm really interested in what it would take for the Cardinals to move off of Marvin Harrison.
Didn't Zuerlein's mock have the Cardinals taking Neighbors anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just a guy that has...
He's got a hard-on for Neighbors. I mean, let's just say it. He's ranked Neighbors as the number one overall player, despite having no information. And then... You know, he was on the first draft podcast it was the Move the Sticks podcast because Jeremiah was otherwise occupied. So he was kind of filling in for Dan Jeremiah. And you can just tell, like, he's kind of got, I mean, I'll say it, I think he's got, like, preconceived notions. And also, one of my critiques, and as we carry on this show, probably longer than we want to, but one of my critiques about Zuerlein is all his grades are within hundreds of points of each other. So basically, everyone's good or everyone's not good, and you can never be wrong with that kind of grading system. I hate it. I'm not saying I hate his notes, but I don't like the grading system. It's very misleading. You can say, well, I had neighbors ahead of Harrison, but only by 0.01.
Right. So it's
so who cares?
Yeah.
What does that even tell you?
Like I always say, it's basically having your cake and eating it too. You're lying. Lying's a strong word.
Hedging.
Yeah.
You're hedging.
Much hedging all of your bets.
And it, I mean, I challenge anyone that's listening to this show, and not trying to be like, I'm not trying to say I'm better or Seth and I are better than anybody, because we're decidedly not. We're just a couple guys talk about draft. But I challenge you all to look at those rankings on NFL.com and sort them out for us, because you can't. Everybody is in a giant jumble. Everyone that matters is in a giant jumble between like 6.8 and 6.6.
Right.
And like, who cares? They come on, give us some stronger takes. At least he does on his mock drafts, I guess.
Anything else before we get out of here?
The only thing I have to say is that we went super long, and we have half of our show that we planned for tonight that we're just going to have to kick down the road. But listen to us here. Listen to us on Rise Up Sea Red this week. And if you're inclined, become a patron. Again, it's very cost effective. It's like less than a cup of coffee at a gas station, I think, to listen to all our bonus episodes. And you can squeeze them all in for a couple months. So... otherwise, thank you all for listening. It's a pleasure to do this show. I mean, I know this is Seth and I have not had as much time to do this as we have in years past, but we are still plugging away. We're trying to get this, we're getting the takes out there, even though our schedules are bad this year. And, I'm looking ahead, Seth. I think 2025, we'll have a little bit more free time.
Yeah, it'll be, a little less crazy, but we appreciate it.
But we're still plugging away. We're going to fire off the takes too.
Exactly. We appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back later this week with a couple more episodes of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Have a good night, everybody.